Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Geekscapists, welcome to the Thor Love and Thunder Geekscape special. I'm Jonathan London, your Geekscape host, and if this is your first Geekscape, well, usually we like to do things like interviews or reviews of video games, comics, movies. Maybe we talk to some creators involved in those things. But this episode right here that you're listening to right now and watching, if you're on Facebook, Twitch, or YouTube, is our Thor Love and Thunder special. And so I got to warn you, the movie just came out over the weekend, and we are going to spoil the heck out of it. So if you have not watched Thor Love and Thunder, this is your warning. We're really going to get into the nitty and gritty. You know how these Geekscape specials work. I've got Ian Kerner to join me. He is the encyclopedic, I think, hive mind of all of comic book knowledge, period. So I love having him on the show. And we're going to be talking about some of the similarities and push and pull a little bit on Thor Love and Thunder and see how it compares to the comics, see what it might mean for the rest of the MCU. Oh, you know how we do this. So what do you say we just get this thing started? Right, Geekscapists, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. This is the Geekscape Thor Love and Thunder special. This is the fourth film in the Thor series, but let's be real. This is like the 30th film in the whole Marvel series, and we got to start thinking about, well, we were long past starting to think about it, but these Marvel shows and movies are just chapters in this ongoing comic book series thrown up on the big screen and in the small screen now that we've got shows like Ms. Marvel, which we're probably going to talk about over the weekend with Ian. Ms. Marvel wraps up this week, so we've got another one of these Geekscape nitty-gritty specials coming right up. So for that one, so go ahead and subscribe. If you don't subscribe to the Geekscape podcast, I don't know what you're waiting for. I've got Sons of Anarchy's Kim Coates on the show later this week. He's got a movie coming out, and we're going to talk tomorrow about this. It won't be live on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook, so if you want to catch that one, you should probably subscribe to the podcast on whatever podcatcher you've got. If you're a fan of Geekscape, it really does us a whole lot of good for you to take a share button, click it, and send Geekscape to all your friends. And if you want to, for the kindness of your heart, leave us like a 5-star review and a couple comments there on whatever podcatcher you use to catch your Geekscape. We really appreciate that. It helps our visibility. And as of recording right now, I got to tell you, Chartable calls us the 91st film interview podcast in the United States. So not bad, not bad. We've been like upwards of 40, somewhere in there, but we've also been around for 15 years. So maybe people are like, I'm a little old with you. I'm a little bored with the old Geekscape. Got new stuff to listen to. Now there are celebrities with podcasts. So why I got to listen to Jonathan talk about it? Well, let me tell you why. I've got a great reason. It's this man right here waiting to talk Thor, Love, and Thunder with you. He's a resource that no other podcast has. His name's Ian Kerner. He's fantastic. And so I'm going to give you one last warning. If you've not seen Thor Love and Thunder, we got major spoilers coming because we're really going to get into it. Ian and I are pretty well versed on both the comic book versions of these characters and the movie versions. And so we're going to push and pull. Our good friend Joey Kochik jumped in and said, oh, shit, I'm actually watching live for once, and I watched it last night. So I hope you enjoyed the movie, and I hope you enjoyed this conversation, Joy. It's great having you. Cassie Horn up in Seattle says, ooh, appreciate the spoiler warning. That's my exit. Miss you, bud. We'll watch after I see the movie with my boyfriend on the big screen. That's a great place to watch this one. And Frank Bowen says, ah, damn spoilers. Love you all. We'll catch the VOD after I see it this weekend. Love the intro. He'll be back. Frank is awesome. So cool. Yeah, that is the nice thing to do is peel yourself off if you have not seen this movie, because there's tons of spoilers coming your way. Let's get Ian in here and let's talk. Ian, my good friend. Hey, buddy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Good, good, good. I'm excited to talk this movie with you because I honestly don't know what you think of it. You and I have, we saw it separately. You were in Santa Barbara. I hope you had a great trip. And then you kind of were on your own to watch the film. I saw it opening night here at where we regularly go. And I got to tell you, man, I missed you at the Regal screening, mainly because I do enjoy this movie. But the first 30 minutes of this movie were really hard for me because there were so many people with their phones out in the theater. And I like to sit kind of middle back. And I want the screen to be big in front of me. I don't want to sit too close. But that also allows anybody who has a screen open between me and the screen for that damn light to distract me. And Ian, finally at about 25 minutes into the movie, and I really wanted to be into this film from the get-go. It was hard with all the distraction. I finally got up and said, yeah, screw this. I'm going to go to the kid in the very front, second row, who's has his phone out. Everybody's seeing it. And I'm going to go up and I'm going to tell him to put the phone away. And I'm going to be nice this time because I know during Doctor Strange, things got a little virulent. So I marched down there, same theater, same first screening of the movie. And I approached the seat and this individual was doing the exact same thing that was really ticking me off in the row just in front of us in Doctor Strange. They were taking photos of the movie during spoiler scenes and posting them right to Instagram stories. And so I said, hey, really kindly, I put my hand on the seat right behind his head and I said, hey, excuse me, the whole theater can see that light on your screen. You really need to turn that thing off. I would really appreciate it. And the person turned around, Ian, and it was the same person as Doctor Strange, who I had like yelled at it and said I was going to kick their head. It's terrible that the behavior hadn't corrected itself. That being said, when we locked eyes, I think there was definitely recognition on my part that it was the same exact person who was doing that during Doctor Strange. And things were different this time. They put their phone away. We never saw it again. And some of the phones were still an issue here and there throughout the movie, but that person was the major, he was the major culprit of ruining the first 30 minutes of the movie. Overall, though, the movie really recovers and actually really, really enjoy the ending of this film. I really enjoy the third act of this movie. So overall, I really enjoy the movie. I'm going to go see it again because those first 30 minutes were really difficult for me to get into because I just kept getting distracted by these damn screens. Put them away, people. Ian, what did you think of the movie? We have not talked about it at all.
You know, I liked it, but I didn't love it as much as I hoped I would. I think that the one big problem the movie has is a question of tone because, you know, when I heard it was going to be Gore the God Butcher, and let's talk about this first. Let's say this. You know, as we go further and further into these movies, you know, there's always the question of what big storylines are they going to do? So once we knew they were doing both Gore and doing, you know, Mighty Thor, Lady Thor, you know, we knew they were really getting deep into Jason Aaron's run on Thor, which is a great, fairly recent run, but he was on the book for a long time. It's a lot of great stories, including those.
I think his first issue on Thor was 2011.
Yeah, so that sounds about right. So I think he did about 10 solid years, right?
And he's really kind of carried the book as almost the main writer in that time. That being said, as you said, there's lots of storylines they could have pulled from, and they actually combined two of them in this one.
Yeah, and to some extent, three.
If you want to talk about Asgard on Earth, because it's not Broxton, Oklahoma.
You can even argue a little bit of four because there's aspects of how this ended that get into a bit of the Mangog stuff, which is a little bit of some rehash of Gore the God Butcher. I mean, Mangog's the original God Butcher anyway. So, you know,
right.
So you get that. But, you know, I love Taika. I love, love, love Ragnarok. And I just felt that some of the goofy, zany, funny stuff, which I absolutely love, sort of clashes with the tone of, you know, like, this is the God Butcher. And like, I didn't feel like the dread. I was never really worried, you know?
Mm-hmm. You and I are the same. I think you and I have the exact same sentiments on that. I think that if they would have cut even as much as 2/3 of the jokes, some of them being like the Stormbreaker being, you know, jealous of,
I mean, I love that stuff, but
if you cut 2/3 of them out, the ones that remain become much funnier.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of tone issues, like you said, where we want the severity of gore. And I think that the opening is beautiful. I love the opening in establishing gore and the loss of his daughter and how he was seduced by the sword.
That was done really well. You know, and then my
struggle, it is undercut by the humor. Yeah.
Yeah. And my struggle is, you know, we've talked about this a number of times on a lot of the specials and going back many years, going all the way back to Daredevil season 1 on Netflix. You know, the struggle is that, you know, and the joke back then, we were like, wow, the A-list characters are just going to get these movies, and then these B-list characters are going to get these shows and have all this great character development the A-list characters aren't going to get. You know, and we always talked about it with Spider-Man, because Spider-Man is always this great, you know, cast of characters that, you know, and all these subplots, and you're never really going to get them, you know? And like Jane with the cancer, that's a big one. In the comic, you know, you actually don't know who Lady Thor is for a while. It's a mystery. You don't know who picked it up. Meanwhile, Jane has cancer and she's sick and she's in the background doing other things. You know, and it goes on for a while. And so you really feel this idea. You come to realize that what's happening is she's on chemo, but every time she grabs Mjolnir, it wipes the chemo out of her system. It doesn't cure her cancer, but it takes the poisons out, which is what chemo is, a poison, right? So the chemo is not working.
There's a reference to that.
Yeah.
But I think saying that that Mjolnir was removing the chemo would have been a lot more effective than Thor just saying, hey, the hammer's killing you. That's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing. And exactly. And, you know, it's like, you know, we get a sense of, okay, she's had it for a bit now. We see it. I think they did a pretty good job, you know. You know, tricky. Because I still think that, you know, I mean, do I wish that we'd seen it in a previous movie? No, you know, but it's hard, you know, it doesn't resonate in the same way that it did in the comics in that sense, you know?
I remember guessing for a long time when the Mighty Thor was introduced. First off, in the comics, Thor loses his ability to lift Mjolnir.
Right, which is related to gore.
Totally related to the
feeling unworthy, because it's after that.
And the way he vanquishes gore in the comics, I didn't really care for. It was almost like, hey, I'm going to dig deeper and I'm going to overcome him and the God Butcher sword. That being said, I think that the way that he overcame gore here resonated with both storylines. And I like how they dovetailed them here, even though the severity of the Jane storyline kind of got short shifted.
Let's back up for a second. So in the comics, we reference that. So Thor loses Mjolnir because Nick Fury whispers something in his ear. You don't know if he hears what he whispered. Thor suddenly finds himself unworthy to wield Mjolnir. So he can't pick it up. But he's still Thor, you know? But there's, you know, years ago in the Thor comics, this is idea. Thor was really, really arrogant, which we saw in the first movie. And similar to the first movie, Odin banishes him. But in the comics, he goes a step further. He wipes his memory and he sticks him into the body of a human who's frail, who actually has, you know, a bad leg and is, you know, weak and all that. And he becomes a doctor and he becomes a really respectable person. And then Odin leads him to a stick in Norway and he strikes the stick and it turns him into Thor. And initially he doesn't have his memory. He just suddenly has his abilities and he sort of sounds like Thor. And over time he gets his memory back.
And that's the Donald Blake character that you get a little bit of an Easter egg for.
You get the Easter egg of that. It's Jane's former boyfriend. So for years he's going back and forth. So that's why the whole idea of the enchantment is whosoever is worthy would have the power of the mighty Thor, but tied to and can actually wield Mjolnir, can actually pick it up. Which, and we see that enchantment about picking it up throughout the movies. We see that with Captain America, you know, in Endgame and a little bit in Age of Ultron, you know, so that's been there. So you have that. And so anyway, in fighting Gore the God Butcher, because very similar to this movie. I think they did a good job of saying, hey, okay, gore hates gods, you know? And I think they did a pretty good job of showing gods are assholes, both with Gore's God as well as, you know, the Pantheon, you know, in the Celestial City, right?
And Christian Bale is phenomenal in this movie. He was one of the highlights for me.
He's absolutely fantastic. I agree completely. And I thought that Russell Crowe did a great job as Zeus. You know, my wife and I were debating the whole idea of, you know, what do you think of the accent?
Yeah, he did it. He tried a thing.
I'm not a giant fan of, okay, he's a Greek god, so he speaks English with a Greek accent. I don't know, you know?
Russell made a choice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and then they had Brett Goldstein do it too.
Right.
You know?
They are Greek.
Yeah. I guess. You know?
So, where do we want to start this off? Because I think that the movie works great with when Christian Bale's on screen, and that works. I think that the Jane cancer stuff is pretty well done, but the tone of these jokes do kind of keep it from really clicking for a while. And then, do you agree that the last act is actually a highlight of this film?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that last act. It felt a little bit like a different movie, you know, in the sense of the tone, you know? Look, I mean, I like the movie. I love that they adapted what they did. I just don't know, you know, I mean, some of it, I mean, the love and thunder of it, you know, the saving the daughter. I don't know how much sense that makes to me, you know, because, well, so the whole idea they set up is he can have, you know, he can ask attorney for anything he wants. Why didn't he ask attorney to live with his daughter?
Mm-hmm.
Why did it only have to be his daughter comes back, but he dies?
Sure.
I mean, I don't have a sense of that.
This is somebody who's also corrupted and broken by this otherworldly presence in the
sword. Right,
but
this necrosword.
I love the intro to the necrosword and how it seduced him and it tricked him into accepting it. And the necrosword turned him into this thing, because before it was just Gore's fury at the gods that slowly corrupted him, and it was his anger that corrupted him. This is the sword corrupting someone who is actually pretty
vulnerable. Well, you ultimately find out that the Necrosword in the comics actually comes from Null, the god of the symbiotes.
Let's tie this into Venom then.
Well, exactly. And that's what, you know, Donny Cates does that great. But yeah, I think they did a good job with that. And I guess you can argue that a price had to be paid for all the things that he did, and, you know, and that corruption, he's going to die no matter what. So that's fine. I mean, a lot of things interesting. We're getting ahead because that's the end.
We are. Can we actually go back to talk about Eternity? Because Eternity wasn't in either of these storylines in the comics, either the Gore storyline or the Jane one. And when I first saw those flashes of Eternity, when he first touches the Necrosword and he's starting to have flashes of the cosmos, the Eternity presence, which we haven't really seen in the Marvel Universe MCU before this, blew me away. It was awesome. Who is Eternity, though, in the comics?
So, you know, over the years, going back to, you know, introducing Thanos and Avengers, we've talked a lot about some of the cosmic aspects of the Marvel Universe, right? And, you know, and whether they would or wouldn't do. And so this movie actually brought a lot of those in, you know, that we haven't seen before. Because in the comics, there's sort of this, the personification of Eternity actually exists as sort of a character. I mean, conceptually, it's bigger than that, but certain beings like Doctor Strange, you know, characters like that have actually dealt with this manifestation of Eternity. And looks, they did it exactly right out of the comics.
It was awesome. That was awesome.
Cool. And, you know, and by the way, you start talking about Easter eggs, like seemingly, I think that, you know, within that chamber, you got a glimpse of death in there.
Well, those are statues. Like, you see a statue of the Living Tribunal. Yeah. You see a statue of a celestial god. You see a statue of all those things, including death. And I like that those were statues and that Eternity wasn't in that chamber. Eternity was beyond that chamber. But those, yeah, that wasn't the Living Tribunal. We've seen the Living Tribunal in things like Loki.
Right.
But it was pretty cool to see all those. You actually, and I love that you see celestials in the pantheon of gods, like that the chamber gods. You see celestials just kind of hanging out. And I'm like, see? Eternals is totally still canon.
Well, Eternals is definitely canon. We could not like the movie. I mean, there's going to be things about Eternals that are going to pop up again. You know? Right. I mean, listen, Black Knight's certainly going to be around.
The Black Knight's going to be around. And Cersei was part of Hercules' Avengers team, along with Black Knight. So if you want to make that Avengers team that Hercules was on, the Brett Goldstein character, you got to have the white personality-less Vision. You've got to have Cersei, and you've got
to
have...
You don't have to have that, that Vision. That Vision wasn't on that team. I thought he had...
I think so. I think White
Vision was on the West Coast team.
Okay.
I thought he...
Listen,
didn't he get his color? I thought he'd gotten his color back by then.
You're the god of comics here on Geekscape, and I know not to fight you. I'm no god butcher here, man. All right? If that's what you say, I'm going to call it legit.
But, I mean, look, here's the thing is, so Hercules. That for me, that's a big deal. I mean, I sort of feel like he belonged in this movie. You know, I don't know that, you know, I mean, I don't know if we're getting a Thor 5. I don't know, you know, how that works out, because obviously it's set up that he has to go after Thor now. I mean, they do call out that there's going to be ramifications for that and taking the Thunderbolt. And
you get a post credit that says Thor will return, which Taika has admitted he didn't know that was something that they were going to add. So he said, I'll be back if Chris is back. If Chris is back, right. I'll be back. And now that they're putting their kids in the films, because Love was actually played by Chris Hemsworth's daughter. Yeah, why not? Let's pay for those colleges.
By the way, Thor can show up in something else too. Doesn't mean it's going to be another Thor movie, you know?
Can we talk about how Thor showed up with the Guardians? That's really where we start with Thor.
Right.
We last saw him join that team at the end of Endgame.
Exactly.
Was Gamora with them at the end of Endgame? No. Because she's not with them here. Okay.
She's not with them, and that's left for Guardians, and clearly an aspect of Guardians is going to be about, because remember, it's not the same Gamora.
That's right.
So she's not interested in being with them. So it makes sense that they've not been together. And I assume that's going to be a big subplot in Guardians 3 will be about finding her, getting her back with them. You know?
And that's in November is the Guardians movie? Or is that Wakanda Forever?
Wakanda Forever is November. We get a Guardians Christmas special, I believe.
Is that an animated thing? What is that?
No, I think it's a live action thing.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So we're getting a Guardians special before the movie.
And that's not Guardians 3. They're not the same thing.
So not the same thing.
I'm going to guess that because it's such a big marquee franchise for Marvel that we're going to get that in the May slot.
What I would expect.
Okay.
Unless there could be a March slot.
Yeah, Doctor Strange did open up the door for a March slot. Doctor Strange was originally going to be in a February slot. So Marvel is just going to land wherever the heck they want. They're the gorilla. Oh. They get to sit anywhere they want.
Well, beyond Wakanda, what do we know we still have in Phase 4? We have Guardians 3. We have Quantumania. We have the Marvels. And we have Fantastic Four, right?
Supposedly.
It's supposed to be the end of Phase 4.
Okay. Ian, this one's really kind of quick, but when you start to see Eternity actually rise in that chamber there at the end with the kids, it looked like Galactus's crowns, didn't it?
I mean, did
you see it? They
look very similar to the top of Eternity's head and the Galactus one with little things pointing out, you know?
What? When I started seeing that, but it was Eternity. We did not get Galactus in the movie. Did we get Fin Fang Foom in this movie, Ian?
I think there was an image of him, right?
In the chamber with the rest of the gods?
Yeah, I think there was an image.
Were there other Easter eggs in the chamber?
For me, I was hoping for Fin Fang Foom in Shang-Chi.
I thought that would have been a great place.
Well, because Fin Fang Foom is McLuhan, and the rings in the comics are McLuhan rings. So they didn't do that, but, you know, I mean, they still saved Fin Fang Foom, seemingly. We still don't know where the rings come from.
Are they possibly tied to our conversation about Ms. Marvel next week?
I mean, they could do that. I don't expect that.
Okay.
I do want to talk about Ms. Marvel, so we'll save that till we see the finale.
Let's set that up for Friday or Saturday, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, I should be able to do that.
All right. Okay. Ian, I wrote up some notes. We're kind of jumping around on Thor, Love, and Thunder, but if you're still listening to this, it's because you've seen the movie. So you just need to accept that we're going to jump around a little bit. I thought, again, the highlight was Christian Bale as Gore. That was fantastic.
It was great.
And it's always great seeing Natalie Portman again. I did want there to be more drama and a little bit more severity to the cancer storyline. We didn't really say goodbye to her co-doctors. We didn't say bye to Darcy. We didn't say bye to Dr. Selvig. Is this the last we're going to see of Jane?
No. So first of all, it was nice that we got the cameos from both of them, right? From Darcy and Dr. Selvig. And we've seen Darcy in WandaVision, so we know she's moved on with her life. She's a full doctor now. She's doing well. So that was cool. So in the comics, as I said, Jane had cancer. And she had Mjolnir, and you know, then at one point she realized it was killing her, so she stopped using it, was doing the chemo. Then she came back in similar fashion, big fight against Mangog, and sacrificed herself and seemingly died. And then Thor and Odin, pretty much, she was actually going to Valhalla, and they basically called her back. And from there, at this point in the comics, all the Valkyries were dead. They brought the Valkyrie that we know from these movies, whose Runa is actually her name in the comics. They actually brought her into the comic universe recently and with Jane. Okay. But okay. Jane becomes Valkyrie. She becomes a very different Valkyrie than what was classic. You know, for a while there was the Ultimate Universe and there was an Ultimate Thor with his own Mjolnir. And so that Mjolnir from the, it was the 1610 universe, ended up evolving, and it became called Underjorn or Undergarn, something like that. U-N-D-R, I think it's J-A-R-A-R-N, something like that.
I'm not going to try
Underjorn, yeah. So, which is the quote-unquote all weapon. So that gives, so Jane basically has typical Asgardian strength and that kind of stuff, but she has like a death vision and things like that. And her weapon can turn into anything she wants it to turn into, basically. So she's currently in the comics, she's Valkyrie. While Thor, you know, has Mjolnir, you know, and I mean, he's worthy, he's not worthy. He's the All-Father now, very similar to Ragnarok in that sense. That's something that actually we should talk about. Thor bestowing the power of Thor onto the kids lines up with him having All-Father power. But at the same time, was so Shazam.
When I saw that he was going to do the All-Father prayer, because that's the prayer that Odin gave Mjolnir and him. Uh-huh. And when I saw that he was starting, I mean, I love this ending. Mm-hmm. The highlight for me is when he starts telling that prayer to the kids and you realize, oh, he is the All-Father now.
Yeah.
Odin's gone. He's the All-Father. He can bestow prayers on things as he did on Mjolnir. He put a prayer on Mjolnir, which allowed it. Jane to be protected and become the mighty Thor when he starts.
Which I will say, by the way, that I do. It's an interesting take on. So whatever it needs to do to make. So they don't even get into the idea of her being worthy. It's about Mjolnir coming to save her, to keep her alive.
I thought that was a great.
I thought it was move. Cool. It was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And I liked it. I do like the montage. There were a lot of parts of this movie where somebody said, gather around, let me tell you a story. There were a lot. I think that was the best one. That in the Guardians one where you see Thor get back into action, that was hilarious. But yeah, I think the rom-com stuff where you see their relationship kind of fall apart, but the most important thing is you see the power bestowed on Mjolnir to take care of Jane. I thought that was a really clean, like really efficient way to do that. Because in the comics, and I always felt like Jane was just worthy, and that's why she became the Mighty Thor. But this one actually has a great reasoning.
And for me, with that reasoning, the idea that she has a different level of control than he did, which in the comics, that's the case. Mjolnir was sentient, straight up chose her, you know? But I like that because Mjolnir, in even reaching out to her, has had to reach out. So they've sort of connected in a different way. Right.
It's a broken Mjolnir, so she can use the hammer with shrapnel and control that, which she uses at the end to combine it with the Necro Sword. But yes, the part where he says the All-Father, when I saw that All-Father prayer starting to happen, and I said, holy shit, he's going to give them his guardian powers, he's going to give them Thor powers, and then you have the Guns N' Roses playing, and the kids get into it, you've got the stuffed animals shooting lasers. I thought that was awesome. I thought that ending was so much fun. Huge fan of that. And then I ultimately knew that Gore was going to slip into eternity first. And I like the emotional win that this movie hinged on. It wasn't like in the comics where Thor just beat Gore by digging deep and smacking him harder. This was an emotional win that tied into the very beginning of the movie. and Gore witnessed Jane die in Thor's arms in the same way that his daughter died in his. And I thought that that was such a clean, beautiful ending in the way to dovetail those two storylines that it really justified for me the decision to take two disparate storylines in the comics and put them together in a really awesome way, even if it led to the complication of Thor having a daughter. Thor's never had a daughter in the comics, has he?
Yes, he has.
Okay, talk to me about that.
Two things. One, part of Aaron's run, he did this thing where we would see both tales of a young Thor, and we also saw King Thor way, way millennia in the future. Okay,
with the three daughters.
Yeah, those were his granddaughters. Those were his granddaughters,
right? And they're all warriors.
Yes, but we actually see a alternate universe Torin, Thor's daughter, but his daughter with Sif. So potentially, we're never clear in Aaron's run who their mother is or father. I mean, we're not really clear on how they're his granddaughters. We just know they are. And then when you get this potential, you know, I think it's basically was based on like that cartoon, but this idea that, you know, the Avengers had kids. It's like
sure.
Next Avengers thing. So yeah. So there's Torn Thor's daughter, as well as their, you know, so for me, my first thought, there's that quick moment when she first appears, when love for, you know, first comes back from maternity, and mm-hmm. she has the glowing eyes, is all black. And that is straight out of the comics image of a character called Singularity, who was introduced in A-Force, which is part of the Secret War. Okay?
Which Secret War?
Well, so there were Secret Wars, and then there was Secret War, and then there was the next Secret War. Basically, the one that I think they're building up to, with all the the multiverse crashing together into a battle world.
Mm-hmm.
That comic storyline introduced this character, Singularity, who looks just like Love, but the powers are different. So,
what are Singularity in the comics' powers?
Sort of like warping stuff and teleportation and things like that, you know, and she gets her power from a singularity versus, to me, are we even clear on what Love's powers are? She can do a blast. She's definitely strong. I mean, she's able to weld Stormbreaker, which Thor said in Endgame. You have to basically be cosmically powered to do that, right?
Yeah, she's wielding Stormbreaker. I think that her powers have some remnant of eternity in them.
I guess because so. I'm not sure why she should have them, but, you know, seemingly so.
It's kind of fun moving forward. I mean, if you go into a Thor 5, Thor's got something to fight for. He's, you know, especially if they do the Mangog storyline, which I think the Mangog storyline would be coming up. You just can't have Mangog being the person who being the villain that wants to destroy the gods.
That's the thing. I think Mangog is just a retread of Gore.
Sure.
So I don't see a reason.
Even though
to be Mangog.
Mangog was OG from the 60s.
Exactly. But I do think Mangog is sort of a retread. So I wouldn't expect that's where they'd go. Hard to say. You know, I think obviously, so they've set up Hercules by Thor seemingly killing Zeus, but then Zeus is fine, but he brings his son Hercules in. You know, the first appearance of Hercules in the comics is Thor 125. It's that cover is so iconic because it's Thor and Hercules clashing.
It's right? Like a boxing ad, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a boxing promotion.
Yeah, Thor has Mjolnir and Hercules has an adamantine mace that is, mm-hmm. is his weapon. So, I thought I loved Brett Goldstein, but did it bother? Like he's CGI'd to fuck, right?
None of those actors were acting with each other in that movie.
No, but not only that, but I'm just saying the body.
No, I mean I don't know. It's a low angle shot up at Brett.
Dude, it was all like his chest is like this big, you know, like
he didn't look like a Rob Liefeld Hercules.
Close. My wife was like, "Oh, maybe he worked out." I'm like. It had to work out for years to get that.
Do you like the casting of Brett Goldstein?
I do.
You
know about
I didn't know going in. I knew that we were going to see Hercules. I didn't know it was going to be Brett Goldstein.
I did.
Oh, that's a shame.
No, I wondered. I asked.
You wanted to know?
I asked someone 2 weeks ago if Hercules is in the movie. He said yes. Then I asked, you know, in the movie, he said, it's the tag. And he asked if I wanted to know who it was, and he told me it didn't disappoint me at all. It's a spoiler, but not. He didn't tell me any of the details, you know. And
yeah,
I was happier to know he shows up, you know. Mm-hmm. See, a part of me is a little frustrated. I get this setting it up, But, you know, when and if are we going to get it? Like, to me, showing Hercules in this movie would have made sense.
Especially if you're going to put him in an Avengers team with...
Right. So now I feel like they have to do a Thor movie with Hercules before you even get to that Avengers team, you know? And I don't know if we're getting that. I mean, obviously they could not, but, you know? Listen, that same issue with Star Fox at the end of Eternals. Are we going to get that story? Or is it enough that Star Fox is out there, you know?
Right, but Star Fox and Hercules both have a plot line already introduced to them.
By the way, dependent on other characters appearing.
Like, Star Fox has to be in a movie where Eternals are rescued.
Well, it doesn't have to be because
was the goal they were. That's the direction they were pointed in.
Yes,
their tags.
But they could decide. They could decide not to do that and just have them show up something, and we can get some exposition on what happened there. You know, and that's fine. I mean, like, you talk about classic Avengers teams. You know, you want that. You know, Star Fox with She-Hulk with Wasp and
Giant Man. So, Ian, what would Thor 5, would they introduce the Dario Agger character, which was the beginning of the Mighty Thor storyline? This character that's this Greek industrialist who's kind of pillaging.
I think that would be an interesting thing for them to finally do in Thor comics. You bring Ross Solomon.
Can you explain them to us?
So by the way, I think what you hit upon there is actually a really interesting thing that they could do with Hercules, even though they've never connected them in the comics.
A rich industrialist who's pillaging these magical items from the different various gods and pantheons.
Right. And it controls Roxxon that has been introduced throughout the MCU.
Oh, yeah. That was an early introduction. You got that in Peggy Carter. You got that in all of it.
You get Roxxon through there. You also got Roxxon in Cloak and Dagger in a big way, which counts, you know. And
I'd love to see those characters again.
Yeah. So he's this industrialist, but it turns out he's actually a Minotaur.
Minotaur.
Yeah. So, and...
Potato, potato.
Yes. Potato, potato. So I think that'd be a really interesting thing, because obviously the Minotaur comes out of Greek mythology.
Yeah, we got some Greek gods now.
This is what I'm saying. So I think that can actually be a really interesting thing to do it that way. I think that's definitely something, plot lines that we haven't seen done yet, and I think it's ripe for that. And it gives you a cool bad guy to do it with, right?
Yeah, and it gives a good way for Hercules to be aiming at Thor, and then this Minotaur gets introduced that is pillaged, you know, and you aim Hercules at the Minotaur now. And now Hercules becomes the good guy that we know Hercules is. And I love that Hercules is boastful, and he's very Thor-like. We're going to see that fight. That fight's going to be awesome. And then we're going to see Hercules become a good guy and end up on some versions of the Avengers teams.
That's what I hope. I like that idea. I love that. So what I was starting to say was, you know, we're getting basically, I think they're going to call her Photon, you know, after, you know, in the Marvels. But, you know, the Carol Danvers' friend's daughter, Monica Rambeau. But she was on the classic Avengers team with Star Fox, with She-Hulk. Hercules ended up on that team, you know. I mean, Hercules had been in the Avengers before, but, you know.
That was her Photon character?
Well, she was Captain Marvel at the time.
Sure.
You know, that's the whole thing about bringing all that together. That's what made it cool in Doctor Strange the Multiverse of Madness, that actually her mother was Captain Marvel, which sort of lines up to those connections. And we'll see where they go with that with the Marvels. The Marvels, I think, that's first quarter 2023, right?
I believe so. I think that's a February movie. And we'll have plenty to talk about when we talk about Miss Marvel wrapping up.
Yeah.
All right. So we've talked about the daughter.
Oh, we didn't talk about the goats. So
let's talk about the goats. So the goats, old school Thor.
The goats are beyond old school Thor. The goats go back to Norse mythology.
Wow.
So the goats are like Thor in Norse mythology, had these goats that were, you know, magical goats, and he would ride them on, you know, on a chariot. He'd be in a chariot. They'd pull the chariot and he'd fly through the heavens.
Yeah, so I love that they worked that in
and,
here.
And so Walt Simonson, in the Walt Simonson run, he brought the goats into the comics. You know, they exist. They're an asteroid. Mid-80s.
Yeah. I had heard, actually, that Kenneth Branagh wanted to include the goats in the first movie, and everybody was like, no, that's a little... let's just, piece by piece, let's introduce the weird stuff.
Right.
Did you hear that rumor?
I didn't, but, I mean, that makes sense. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of research going into making a Thor film, you're going to end up finding out that in ancient Norse mythology, there was these two goats that would pull the chariot, and... it's been in the comics definitely throughout Aaron's run. And you're right. They probably first showed up in those Walt Simonson runs in the mid-80s. There are a couple other Walt Simonson. We are having a whole pronunciation celebration today. I get it, baby. I get it. It's all fair here on Geekscape. Okay. So Ian, what other aspects are we still missing? We don't have Thor yet. We don't have the dog.
I love Thorie. You know, and Thorie's interesting because, you know, you bring up Thorie for Thor, but Thorie actually really comes out of Loki.
Yeah, it's a Loki character.
Yeah, like, I want, you know, like, put Thorie on in Loki.
Which they're shooting right now. They've been shooting.
And honestly, like, that's sort of the point. Like, he named his dog after Thor, which in a weird way is like it's brotherly love, but it's also making a statement of Thor's just a dog, right?
Yeah, but the dog...
like when Thor meets Thorie, he's like, Thorie, really? You know, like
the dog just wants to destroy, maim, and kill. Yeah. Like the dog is horrendous, which is what I love.
The dog is a hellhound. I mean, so.
They've not had Thorie for a while in the comics, and nor have they had one of the crows that is also a major player in the Thor. And you know, but we also don't have Throg. We saw Throg, but we don't really have Throg.
But we did.
I heard there's a 4-hour version of this movie.
So. Supposedly, you know, it's interesting. I was actually reading a bunch of that today. I love Taika Waititi. I mean, he's so funny. He's such a great filmmaker, showmaker. I mean,
Our Flag Means Death
is fantastic.
You know, next week we get the first episode of the new season. Oh, this week we get the first. What's today? It's Monday. We get the first episode of the new season of What We Do in the Shadows. Fantastic. Yeah. We're both big Taika fans.
Big Taika.
What were we going to say? I'm sorry.
Well, Taika straight up said he was asked about director's cut. He said, you know, he doesn't believe in releasing a director's cut. He said, there's a reason why, you know, first of all, he says directors need to be reined in. And no, as far as he's concerned, he'd never release it. Anything that was cut for a reason. And even if he thought it was the most brilliant thing while he was shooting it, then he looked later, he thought it made the movie's halt to, come to a halt. And, you know, I mean, there's reasons they pulled him out. Now, would I like to see, I mean, we assume that the Grandmaster, Jeff Goldblum, we know shot scenes. We know that, For this film, Jeff Goldblum shot scenes. Peter Dinklage, who played Eitri in Endgame, shot scenes. And Lena Headey did. So we can assume, and supposedly the Peter Dinklage and Jeff Goldblum scenes were actually with Christian Bale. So we can assume that Gore probably killed them.
And Lena Headey, who did she play?
We don't know who she played.
But okay, so she wasn't a pre-established character.
Not a pre-established character.
Okay. No.
In fact, it's interesting because her management company is suing her for money from the movie, even though she's not in the cut.
Yeah.
But she got paid. So anyway. But yeah, so we're not going to see those scenes. Taika said, DVDs that no one really buys anymore. Sometimes they get released. Sometimes you have a little thing on Disney Plus video they could put them out there, but I'm not expecting them. You know, I'd love to see them. Here's the thing is when you cut stuff like that and it isn't out there, then, you know, those characters can now appear elsewhere, even if they would have been killed in that. So, you know,
right.
Generally with the comic book stuff, I'm always interested in a long cut. I'd really like to see a long cut of Doctor Strange, in the Multiverse of Madness, because I think that's a much better movie for what they cut out of it, you know?
Agreed. And we're going to go to the theaters in early August and see a director's cut of Spider-Man No Way Home. Are they still doing that? I heard that they're re-releasing it back in the theaters with a longer cut.
I heard that. I believe they're still doing it.
You want to go?
Yeah, I'll go.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm down.
Okay. Well, Ian, what stone is left to be uncovered here on the Thor Love and Thunder? We've talked about a lot of this stuff.
We talked about a lot of things. One of the interesting things I think, you know, it's interesting that they did Zeus this way, you know, because they established Zeus and Hercules. So we can extrapolate from that that the Greek pantheon exists. You know, we don't know why they're not with their entire pantheon or how that works.
We've seen the Egyptian pantheon.
Right. As you'll recall, you know, I was really disappointed. I thought it would have been a great thing to actually have Gore show up in, you know, a tag in Moon Knight. Apparently, the Moon Knight showrunner wanted to make reference to Gore, to God's dying. But they didn't let him do it because he knew at least that much. But Ra was mentioned in this movie. So, you know, so I mean, look, gods are gods. There is a connection between different gods, you know? So that's cool. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen with that stuff.
The Guardian stuff I thought was great.
The Guardian stuff was fun and cool. And
I'm glad it didn't overstay its welcome. It was there to introduce Thor and to introduce the fact that there was a crisis in the universe, that the Goro was out there killing people.
And I guess we can assume, notwithstanding the fact that James Gunn's Guardians 3 got pushed a bit, the truth is Thor joining them was an endgame. It wasn't Gunn's thing. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't need him, right?
Yeah, but he was hilarious in this movie. I mean, it was hilarious seeing them respond to Thor in this movie when he comes in and just starts smashing stuff. And you're like, oh, God. They're just sitting there watching him.
Honestly, the funniest thing, you knew was going to happen when he goes on, but go save the temple and the temple just falls apart.
Yes.
And he's trying to apologize for it. And the guy's like, just won't. He's like, no, it's fine. You know?
They're so sick of Thor. He brings these stupid goats onto the ship. Those openings are worth going to see the movie again. And
the goat whale is hysterical.
Is it always hysterical? Some people liked it every time. I think it was funny every time. Right?
It was funny every time. I mean, it would get old at a certain point, but it played really well. And even just the Nebula's reaction to them on the ship, it's just so funny.
Yeah. So wrapping things up, like, let's see if they do the Dario Agger Minotaur.
I think that's interesting. I think that makes a lot of sense for what, you know, for where they're going with bringing Hercules in. It's very original, but it's still tied to the comics. And it is. It's surprising that they actually never did connect to that. But, you know, Hercules was in a different place for a while, comic-wise. I mean, they brought him back recently. You know, actually in Guardians of all things.
Are you reading the Maestro book that Peter David does? I love that.
You said two things that made it guaranteed I was reading it. You said Maestro and you said Peter David.
Yeah, I love that. Geekscapists who don't read the comics, Maestro is a future version of the Hulk that is brilliant and evil. And he comes back to fight the Hulk in the current timeline. But they're exploring Maestro's, like, post-apocalyptic future in the comics, and Peter David, who created the character and has one of the most famous Hulk runs, is writing it, and it's a must read if you're a Hulk fan or a fan of the whole Maestro storyline, which it doesn't look like they're going to get to anytime soon with the She-Hulk stuff, because we still have Brilliant Banner.
I don't need them to get to that anytime soon. I mean, it's tricky because you still end up with that issue of, are you going to get an actual Hulk movie, you know? Mm-hmm.
Which Universal owns the rights to any single Hulk movie.
Right.
He has to appear in it with other properties.
But you can do that. Here's the problem. The Maestro is a potential future, you know, and how far off do you go? I mean, are we ready? Are we ready for these movies to jump into that? Is that a cool thing you can do with a Kang, you know, and Kang throwing him into a future like that.
And suddenly you have Maestro that you have to deal with, who's a brilliant evil Hulk. That'd be cool. Right.
By the way, that's what Age of Ultron in the comics was, right?
Yeah. Jason Elliott says, Peter David's run was the defining run for the Hulk. And I think nobody would argue. Nobody would argue on that one. All right, Ian. I think I really, really enjoyed this movie. If not loved this movie, I'm going to give it a second screening. It's got some tone stuff going on, but I think this is an enjoyable movie.
Yeah, but it's a fun movie. Definitely worth seeing. I mean, if you like the Thor
movie. Every single one of these movies is worth seeing, Ian. Remember when we were 12 and we dreamed of seeing these things?
That's how I feel.
And now we see them.
That's how I feel. I feel the same way about the shows. Even some of these comic book shows, even when they're not as good as others, they're like, I can't believe, like, compared to what we used to get. You know, you and I've had this argument for years. You know, we would talk about some of the Berlanti stuff. You go like, oh, it drags on and soap opera stuff. I'm like, yeah, it's a comic book. Like, you know, you get a lot of those B storylines when you're doing 22 episodes a season. But, and even the romance stuff, that's comics. You know, comics that have been coming for years and years. I mean, how much back and forth about Thor's love life have the comics done between Sif, between Jane, between, you know, on and on.
Right.
Roz was a thing, you know.
This is our soap operas, so we're going to enjoy them. And they're not just for boys anymore. This is for everybody. It's kind of cool to see everybody being into some of these newer characters, older characters, niche characters. And we're going to be back with a newer character who also is pretty awesome. And I'm enjoying it for the most part. We're going to talk about it this weekend. Let's talk about Ms. Marvel, which wraps up this week.
I look forward to it.
And we'll be doing that. Jason Elliott wants to send you off with, I enjoyed the breakdown of this film, Ian. You really broke down things brilliantly.
Thank you.
And he goes on to say, you know, my sister is a Marvel fan, and she never really read the comics. So I think these are doing a great job of bringing people who don't normally read comics into the
And we'll talk about this more in the Ms. Marvel special, but I'll say something that the shows do in general, the shows across the board, I think are doing really well, is the biggest complaint, and I live with a writer, so a lot of times she comes out of the movies, and I really want her over and to watch the Marvel movies, but she's sort of hitting a weariness about they feel the same. Mm-hmm. The shows don't. The shows are all doing something different. They have the room to breathe and really tell a longer story, really get something I was saying earlier, but they get into this character stuff and they go and they all have a very different tone. They're just not typical. Honestly, it's the exact reason why a lot of supposed fanboys I know that they just want to see a big Marvel, you know, blow them up extravaganza and don't like the shows because there's something different. And that's the thing about comic books is they actually really represent Marvel Comics much better because Marvel Comics are more rounded that way. Ms. Marvel, for all of its changes, really gets the tone of the Ms. Marvel comic, which admittedly is not for every 50-year-old guy, you know?
I get that, right.
You know?
Well, we're going to talk about it this weekend, Geekscapists. We got a lot of Geekscape coming. As I said, Kim Coates from Sons of Anarchy is going to be on the show this week. Again, that won't be live, so if you're going to want to listen to that one, just subscribe on any podcast app that you've got. Go subscribe to Geekscape. And you know what? We've got tons of shows on the podcast network as well, ranging from everything from wrestling to music to horror films. You're just going to have to search for Geekscape on a podcatcher and find out some of that stuff for yourself. We're also going to be at Comic-Con. Ian's going to be there with us. We're at booth 3919. That is next week. I'm not ready, but I'm getting ready quickly to be there. It's going to be fun. And a week from Tuesday for me, because I drove that damn booth down there and set it up. Yeah. And I got to tell you, we got a lot of friends coming by the booth to do some signings and appearances. So that's going to be a cool place to hang out. And if you don't go to Comic-Con, you're also going to be able to hang out with us because every day we're going to do a recap of what we experienced. And the only way to listen to that is by subscribing to the podcast right here. So again, subscribe to the Geekscape podcast, share it with your friends. You're going to go to Comic-Con with us. And as Jason says, who we first met in person at Comic-Con, Jason from Houston says, damn it, I'll have to miss it yet again. My sister's wedding is that weekend. Well, congratulations to your sister, Jason. And you can hang out at the wedding listening to Geekscape on your earbuds with our recaps every day of what we experience on the floor, man. So you're still going to come to Comic-Con with us. That's what we're doing, okay? So enjoy the wedding and enjoy your Geekscape at Comic-Con. All right, Ian, thank you so much for doing the show, dude. And we'll talk to you this weekend as we talk Ms. Marvel.
Sounds good.
All right. Peace.
Peace.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.